this is Michael Bozy. Welcome to Marketing Without the Marketing. Really glad that you can be here. And I'm really glad to have a special guest on the show today. Her name is Laura Nunnemaker. She runs her own business doing social media for small businesses, and she should know. Aside from running her own business now, she used to own and run her own bakery in Atlanta. And though she helps small businesses of all types, she's specializing now in helping cafes and restaurants reach their customers via a social strategy. Laura, welcome to the show.
Hi, Michael. I'm honored to be here.
Well, great to have you. Well, Laura, you have an interesting path, going from restaurant owner to the business that you're running now. Could you give us just sort of a quick overview of why you're doing what you do?
Sure. So I feel like I've lived like 9 lives, but we'll start at 2001 when I was hired by Cox Radio to manage radio station websites. I was always very excited about the internet, so that was a really great job to get. And right off the bat, we started doing email marketing. And then when social media came on the scene, we started working with that. So when I left there in 2012 to open a retail bakery, it just made sense for me to do all of those things for the bakery in addition to being the baker. So that's kind of how I went from dealing with a corporate situation to small business situation. And then when we closed the bakery, I just decided, hey, I know all of these things about how to make this work for a small business that's really strapped for time and money. Why not help other small businesses do the same thing?
Cool. That sounds great. Makes sense that you were just sort of doing it and then found yourself as the person who could do it. I think that happens a lot for folks. So,
yeah.
Now, most of my clients and prospective clients are digital businesses and startups. So, I don't deal too much in the offline world, but what would you say, since you've lived in both realms, what are the key differences between an online business and an offline business?
Well, you can create a community for both, but when you have an offline business, you have a real live community that you see face to face. So you actually get to experience getting to know them through social media and online interactions, but then you also get to know them as real people rather than just, screen names and all of that.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Let's actually talk about social media in particular. It's very different for brick and mortar businesses, folks who are trying to draw from a local community and then maybe even reach beyond that. But how can a brick and mortar business actually use social media to help amplify what they do?
Well, social media is a two-way communication. So you don't just put up posts and expect to never come back and deal with them. It's not like a billboard or radio ad. People are actually going to respond to you when you put up information on your social media accounts. So it's very important to actually respond to people when you do that.
Right.
You can also focus on creating and curating content that your customers are going to be interested in and is going to help them get along in their lives. And keep a regular update schedule. It's good to even just come up with a content schedule that you'll do all the time and then fill in the moment posts as they happen.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like it's the opportunity to sort of extend that relationship beyond the face-to-face. So if, when you were running your own bakery, I would imagine that you'd see customers week-to-week or day-to-day, but it would allow you to have sort of a different relationship, if you will, in the digital realm. Is that right?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, can you go over some of the proactive things that you could do with social media? And of course, I'm thinking of folks that are running a local business, whether it's a cafe, bakery, restaurant. What are the proactive things that you can do?
Well, the most important thing to do is to come up with a basic content calendar for yourself. So maybe you have a themed post you're going to do every Tuesday, or maybe you have a weekly special that you can announce to your audience, or maybe you have a, you know, a fun, maybe there's a day where you ask them a fun question or have a poll, but just lay those into your calendar. So that takes the work off of you of having to come up with ideas all the time. You have it already laid in there. So that'll make you, make it a lot easier to keep a consistent presence on social media.
Right, right.
Well, that said, you don't want to constantly post just about yourself, though.
I totally agree with that. You know, I mean, that I think is something that's similar between digital businesses and offline businesses. You know, social is meant to be, and I like that you said that it needs to go two ways. I always use the word bi-directional. Just because I feel like that's the opportunity in social. It is a social space, right? Folks are not there to be promoted to. They're there to make connections. And when a brand shows up, you got to be really careful with that. So how do you do that? How do you sort of, you know, again, thinking from the offline world, how do you actually come up with that mix?
It really depends on your particular business. You might have to play around with it a little bit to find the right mix.
Yeah.
A good place to start is with just 20% promotional posts, and then the rest being the other things that you can post, you know, news that they can use, and even, you know, fun polls and things like that. There are certain platforms and businesses where more promotional posts can work. For instance, as a bakery, we were huge on Instagram, and, you know, probably at least 90% of our posts were pictures of our food, but people love that. People love pictures of food, so you can get away with it there.
So you had really good luck with Instagram in particular. Any other platforms that were good for you?
Well, we were lucky enough to have started up our Facebook account before they started really locking it down for pages. So we had good luck on Facebook and pretty much closed down right around the time they were really messing around with pages. And, you know, now you pretty much have to pay to play.
You really do. And maybe it's worth explaining that. I've talked about this in prior episodes of the podcast, but Facebook's recent changes to the way that they run pages that's different than your profile really results in very low organic growth. And of course, they say that they're doing that because they're trying to fit the algorithm so it delivers better content to users. And I'm sure that's true. But I don't know from your measurements in your own business, Laura, for me, any clients that I have who are using pages or stuff that I've done in my own realm, it's about 9% or less of my actual Facebook fans or followers or folks who have liked the page, 9% who actually see a post. So that means you're not really reaching your audience when that happens.
Yeah.
Unless, like you said, like, you know, you're willing to pay to boost that. And I just wanted to clarify that because that's really, I mean, that's changed the strategy for a lot of folks. You can't reach your own audience for free any longer if you're using a Facebook page, which makes things difficult if you're trying to get the word out, as it were.
Well, one thing I will say about Facebook, though, even though a lot of businesses are tempted to just say, oh, forget it, but people expect your business to have a Facebook page.
Yes, yes, yes.
So even though it's not, you know, it feels like it's not worth it organically to post, you really do need to keep a regular presence on Facebook, because if somebody looks you up on Facebook and sees you haven't posted in 6 months, they're going to wonder if you're open.
You're absolutely right. And it's almost like you have to do it now. And the thing is, you know, what I do with my clients often is just, you know, we might very selectively pick a time to actually boost a post or run an ad campaign. So you're not doing that all the time. But if you've got something in particular where you want to try something, it's really good for targeting. And of course, yes, you do have to pay to play. But you're right, you can't go dark on that. It'd be like, you know, stopping blogging or stopping posting in anything. And, you know, with 1.5 billion people on the platform spending something like, I think the average is over 20 minutes per day per user on it, which is just insane for an average. I mean, you got to be there. So,
yeah.
So the, you know, thing that sort of gets, me thinking about content production and, you know, a lot of my clients worry, you know, they sort of say, I don't know what to write about, or I don't know what to share. I don't know what to post. So I can imagine this is a problem with local businesses. I mean, you were a baker and yes, you knew this stuff, so you had an advantage. But I would imagine a lot of folks say, hey, I'm not a writer. I don't know what to do. How do you advise local businesses about the type of content that that they should create?
Well, for us, we just thought about our physical community right around the bakery. So what do the people that live around you and drive by you on the way to work or in your neighborhood, what do they need to know? And things that would come up are, like in Atlanta, we have a lot of road races here all the time. So there were at least two or three that would impact our neighborhood. So that's the kind of thing we would tell our customers on social media. Festivals, we have spring and fall, lots of festivals. Some of them, again, impact the neighborhood. So it's good to tell people about that. So when they're, even if they're not coming to see you, they might be trying to go somewhere. And if you're the person that, you know, the business that said, hey, I'm looking out for you. I don't want you to get stuck in traffic. It makes you the good guy.
Yeah. So you're really saying this is not promotional. This is just trying to help the folks who are in your community.
Yeah. Think of them as they're your friends, right?
No, that makes perfect sense. I appreciate that. And I think those are the types of things, you know, I speak about that a lot in the podcast, which is just about providing value to folks without the expectation of something in return. And what you just said is, it's really a great example of that. And, you know, the kind of cool thing is you let the customer come to a decision about you on his or her own. And right. I really appreciate that. That shows a lot of respect for the customers and your perspectives. But what about, can you sort of dig in a little bit more on the events part of it?
Sure. So you're not the only local business in the area, and you all have the same struggles with trying to get people in the door and getting your name out there and not having big advertising budgets. So really, everybody can work together to promote each other's events. And we used to do that all the time and sometimes even participate in them. One of my favorite local businesses was Criminal Records. If you ever look them up online, they have an amazing social media presence and have really built their community. And it's one of the reasons why they're a record store in business right now.
I think I remember those guys from my visits to Atlanta. So very cool. Glad to hear that they're still around.
Yeah. So one of their big events is they had a New Year's Day good luck potluck. And it was a vegan potluck basically in the record store. And every year we would bring the greens and the black eyed peas.
Nice.
And it was just a really nice community event that we would be at and they would promote and we would promote. And it was just a great place to meet our customers in another location.
Oh, very cool. Yeah. So it's kind of like you guys were helping one another out.
Yeah.
Very cool. Anything else? Any other sort of content ideas that you have for folks?
Well, specifically for our bakery, there were things like recipes we would post for them. There's always new vegan products coming on the market, so people love to hear about that, especially sometimes we would get a hold of them before other people would, so we would be able to give a little review of them.
Really great to be able to sort of narrow it down to a group that, you know, it's not for everyone per se. I mean, I suppose vegan food is for everyone. We have a vegan bakery in our neighborhood here in Boston. And, you know, actually they don't, they don't promote it as such, even though everything there is vegan. It's really great. All their baked goods are really great, but they don't go out of their way to promote it.
Yeah, we didn't have any signage on the outside that said we were vegan. And we were right next to a transit stop, and people would come in all the time. And then it would be months down the road and they'd hear somebody say that the cinnamon roll they were eating was vegan, and they would be shocked. And then they would just shrug their shoulders and keep coming back.
Hey, as long as it's delicious, right?
Exactly.
Well, no, that's really cool. Any other ideas that you have for the content?
Well, another thing that I used to do is to proactively find people that needed our help. In TweetDeck, which anybody can do this, I had a search column set up for Vegan Atlanta.
Nice, nice.
And people would post all the time that they were coming into town and they wanted to know where to eat, what can they, you know, where can they have lunch, where can they get pizza, where can they, you know, all of that kind of thing. And so I would just monitor that and answer them. I wouldn't tell them, hey, come eat here. I would say, oh, you want pizza? Here's three places that have vegan pizza.
Very smart.
And even though none of those places was us, a lot of those people would make it a point to come see us because we had been so helpful to them.
Right. Or think of what that means to the other business, to the pizza place, right? The person shows up, hey, how did you find out about us? Oh, well, Laura's Bakery told us.
Oh, yeah.
And that makes them want to do a favor for you as well. So it's, you know, that's the great power of social. It allows you to do favors for one another for really not that much of a cost, you know, which is great. But you gave a really good, just using social as a watching tool is a big thing. I feel like that is something that a lot of folks don't understand, at least the ones who are just starting out. They think of it as a promotional tool. I always say it's not a promotional tool. It's more of a connecting tool. That's why it's called social media. But using it to actually pay attention to what's happening around you so that you can be responsive and you know, be able to take action in that bi-directional fashion. So my other question for you then, Laura, would be, how can you, you mentioned hashtags, right? How can you use that as a local business? Is it better to try to create your own hashtags or to sort of ride someone else's?
Well, you'll probably use existing hashtags for the most part, because to create them and to get people on board with using them is really a lot to ask of people.
Mm-hmm.
So like with our bakery, there's a whole string of hashtags related to vegan that I would use all the time. And then other ones related to food and maybe breakfast or brunch or, you know, those kinds of things, depending on what makes sense. Now, you've got Twitter and Instagram are two different animals when it comes to hashtags.
Definitely.
So on Twitter, you'll just want to use one or two of the most relevant hashtags. But on Instagram, studies have shown that you basically cannot use too many hashtags.
So true.
I do have an example of a case where you might want a specific hashtag. If you're promoting like an event, maybe you have an event that's big for your business, you could create a hashtag for that.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you're doing a contest, I actually have a client right now that's a restaurant and we're doing a contest and it's like hashtag my business contest. And that makes it easy for us to find all the entries for the contest.
Yeah, you kind of have to do that if that's the case. Yeah. And, you know, there's cool tools, things like Zapier, if you've ever used them. I've used them for contests too, where you can just, you can have it automate the collection of tweets that that come via a certain hashtag and populate a Google Doc with it. It's really fantastic.
That's exactly what I'm doing right now with that contest.
Yeah, it's very, I mean, otherwise it's just really hard to manage, you know? So, I mean, that's a great example of where you can automate, you know, these processes that are sort of repetitive and difficult. So I can leave a link to that in the show notes though, so that folks can try that out. It's a really great tool. great suggestions on that, Laura. That's excellent. I appreciate sort of some of these advanced tips for folks that want to go a little bit deeper on that. Now, you know, we've talked a lot about some of the proactive things that you can do, but also what about just because I would imagine this would be important for a brick and mortar business, but what are some of the things that are important to do in more of a reactive fashion?
You'd be surprised, but just respond to all customer interactions.
Well, no kidding.
So many businesses are not doing this. I see it all the time. And It just leaves a really bad taste in somebody's mouth when it's not just them, though. It's not just them not getting an answer to their question on Facebook. It's everybody who comes by to your page and sees that you did not bother to answer that person's question.
Right. What a missed opportunity.
So I would say, like, favorite, somehow interact with every interaction that a customer sent your way on social. It doesn't mean you have to write an actual comment back to every single thing that people do, but an acknowledgement is great.
Yeah, and you know, I totally agree. And here's the other thing about this. While, you know, email sort of set our expectations for, you know, what we thought was a reasonable response time, I feel like social is way, way shorter. The stuff that I've read about this say that people expect to be to hear back from you within the hour.
Yeah.
On some platforms. So that's much different time span than email, for instance, or a phone call, which have generally been, you know, 24 hours is about reasonable for a cold call via phone or email. But social is way shorter. And if you just let that go forever, I mean, I can't believe people even do that, because, you know, I mean, that can be really damaging to your brand, to the other visitors who show up.
Absolutely. And I like to explain it as, you wouldn't just not answer your phone ringing in your business, would you? No.
Right.
So, you know, it's the modern day equivalent of that.
No doubt. And, you know, this sort of speaks to another issue, which is just, I mean, you and I both know running a small business is very difficult. It takes a lot of time and energy. And, you know, small business owners of all types are just always extremely strapped for time. So you can see where that type of thing might happen, where they might let something go or, you know, not respond in time or whatever. But, I mean, trying to help people become more efficient with their content strategy is really, really critical. And I'm sure both you and I do that with our clients. But, you know, I always say marketing is really important. It's one of the most crucial things that you can do, but it can't take over your life. It can't be everything. So we talked a little bit about some automation that you can add to your efforts, but how do you advise your clients in this area? How can you automate and do so carefully?
Yeah, you definitely have to be careful with automation. Pretty much every social media platform gives you the opportunity to automatically send it to another platform. And I feel like I feel like Twitter is generally the dumping ground for all of the other social media accounts.
Indeed.
And what happens is I have a blog post with all these examples of people dumping their, like, every time they post a blog post, it automatically goes to Twitter. But they're also, maybe they're also posting it on Facebook, which they automatically have going to Twitter.
Oh, God, yeah.
Right? So then you have this string of all the same thing just dumping on Twitter, and it looks terrible. So I don't recommend that you do that. I recommend that you don't use the automatic cross-posting in the social media platforms.
Yeah, I'm with you on that.
Now, that's not to say that you shouldn't cross-post. I do this all the time. But what I do is I use Buffer. That's my tool of choice. But you can do that in Hootsuite, or I'm sure there's a bunch of, those are just like the most affordable ones to use.
Mm-hmm.
You can send the post to multiple platforms and then go back in and change each post to suit the platform. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Twitter, you'll have one or two hashtags you want to go with it. You don't want any hashtags on Facebook
because
nobody cares about them there. And you're going to need a little more of a lead in, something to kind of grab them a little bit more on Facebook, or to ask them a question about it, or pull out something from the content just to, you know, give them a little bit more there. And same with like Google+.
Yeah. You know, I say this all the time, the context matters for each of these spaces. I mean, if you're posting things that are not of that community, I mean, you'll be seen as an imposter and you won't be allowed in. I mean, each one of these things is its own community.
Yes.
So even though you may have a lot of overlap, you know, you may have a customer or a client or prospective or some member of your audience who follows you in multiple channels, there are some who only follow you in one. And if that post comes to them and it's out of context, they know you're an imposter. Or at least, even if you're not, they're going to think that you are. And yeah, you don't want to risk that. I'm with you on that. I try to avoid that as much as possible. You know, whenever I'm doing this, it's extremely careful and in a very, very limited way. But besides, you know, being careful with the cross-posting, what else can you do with regard to automation to help sort of ease this time burden?
Well, there are some tools out there. Mention is one. I think it's mention.net.
Mm-hmm.
That will watch all the social networks and let you know when your brand is being mentioned, and will kind of help you keep on top of all of those interactions.
Mm-hmm.
It is a paid tool. Well, if it's going to be useful for you, it's a paid tool.
Right.
One thing I recommend is simply setting aside maybe 10 minutes a day or every other day where you just have it on your schedule. You check all of your social accounts, make sure everything is running smoothly and that you've answered everybody. It's part of your routine.
That's right.
And that way you can keep on top of it. People are pretty forgiving of a small business.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. Laura, what about, this just kind of makes me think about email too. What about email lists? Do you do this sort of as a small business owner, right? And especially with an offline business, do you try to build your email list right out of the gate, or do you build a social following first and then try to convert them to email? I mean, what was your strategy on that?
We started email and social at the same time for the bakery.
Mm-hmm.
Now, email was really just a sign up on the website, and social was Facebook and Twitter to start off with. I think Instagram wasn't even on the scene yet.
Yeah.
But I recommend starting early and building your community, and definitely start your email list from the beginning, because that's something that you own. You own and you control when you can talk to those people, not Facebook deciding, oh, I'm just going to show your, you know, I'm just going to send your email to 5 of your 100 subscribers. That's not how that works.
Mm-hmm.
It gets to go to everybody. So.
Right. I agree with that. I mean, if you have the permission to be in someone's inbox,
yeah,
and you think about that, that's very high level permission. Just, I mean, most folks use their inbox as a to-do list.
Right.
So if you've got permission to be on someone's to-do list, that is incredibly valuable, because it's pretty high level access to that customer. So there's, you know, there's a measure of trust there. And I agree with you about owning your own audience. If your audience is completely on a social network, you don't really own that audience, that the social network does.
Yep.
And, you know, you don't want to be completely beholden to, you know, some corporation who's really, they don't have your best interest in mind as a brand. You know, they're looking to serve their users and their shareholders. So now, any other topics or any other tips that we didn't cover that maybe we left out that are really particular to brick and mortar businesses?
Well, I would say if you aren't sure how to go about it at first and you're worried about you know, managing five social media accounts. Don't manage five social media accounts.
Right, right, right.
Manage the one that is most targeted towards your audience that you're trying to reach. And then as you gain confidence, you can add more platforms. And I would suggest, though, right off the bat, that you go ahead and register your account with any platforms that hit your target audience, even if you're not going to be using them right away.
Yeah, I always call that a land grab, and always advise that. Because you don't know, these things come and go, and either, you know, surge in popularity or, you know, starts to flag.
Yeah.
And you don't know that right now. So it's not a bad idea to sort of own at least your handle and some, you know, an address and a very basic profile out there, just so that if someone shows up, at least you're there and says, hey, look, we're not on this this platform now, but find us on Twitter or find us on Facebook or whatever. Then it's up to them.
Right.
If, hey, I don't want to join you on Facebook, fine, but at least you haven't, at least you were there.
Right.
You know, I think that's good advice, and I always advise the same. All right, cool, Laura. This is really great information, and I really appreciate you being on the show because, like I said, I don't spend a lot of time with offline businesses, and I just feel like these folks need help as well in trying to extend what they do from the real world into the digital world. I think can make a huge difference to a brick and mortar business. So I really appreciate that. If any of my listeners want to learn more about you, read your articles, which I quite enjoy myself, or get any specific help from you, where can they find you?
They can find me at socialforsmall.biz. And from there, you can find everything else that I do. I have newsletters. I have my social media accounts you can get to from there. And I blog there about specific issues relating to small businesses trying to do online marketing. So if you're struggling with that, it's a really great resource.
Yeah, I would agree. That's how I found you, was through one of your great articles. So, all right. Well, I'll be sure to put links there in the show notes so that you can find Laura. And, you know, if you're on iTunes mobile, you can link directly from the episode show notes. But on the web, just navigate to the podcast through the main address at a main page, controlmouse.media. And of course, if you have any questions for Laura or for me, please leave them in the comments section for this episode. I do read every comment, love to hear from you guys, and I'll, of course, make sure that Laura gets them too. So thanks everyone for listening, and a special thanks to you, Laura. Thank you for being with me today.
Thank you very much.
All right, everyone, we'll see you on the next episode. Thank you very much.